This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Good morning. Some American soldiers make a stop on their way to Iraq or Afghanistan. They spend time at Fort Riley, Kansas. It's a base from which the Army once made war on Indian tribes. George Custer lived there, as did black troops known as Buffalo Soldiers. Today in the Kansas grasslands, soldiers train for another unconventional war, which explains why an Army officer leaped out of his Humvee and crouched beside one of the bodies strewn across a Midwestern road.
Hey, Chris, start a triage. Everyone else, find out who the most wounded are. Let Doc know we got an amputee over here.
Major Chris Kuhn is one of several thousand Americans being trained this year as advisors to Iraq's Army. They'll work in small groups alongside Iraqi units. We're reporting this week on a job that may have to succeed before American forces can leave Iraq.
Get on the radio, Cal 3, we need a medevac. Time now.
On this gravel road in Kansas, the American advisors and the people playing Iraqi troops have encountered an extremely complicated situation. There's been a truck bombing and the release of chlorine gas and a bunch of Shiite Muslim pilgrims happening by just then, beginning to protest, and insurgents attacking from the perimeter. A complicated situation, but not implausible in Iraq. Some of the Americans have never seen anything like this. Others are veterans of Iraq, including Captain Chris Kamek, who witnessed a real suicide bombing.
Aside from the smell, which is tough to replicate, this was pretty good as far as the noise going on, the confusion.
To manage that confusion, trainees are encouraged to exchange ideas, starting as soon as the exercise ends.
What would be some pointers for the group on interacting within such a chaotic situation?
The trainees review their own actions, and they also listen to Iraq veterans who were brought to Fort Riley.
What I tell the soldiers here is what you're going to see over there is not the U.S. standard. It's an Iraqi standard. It is the way they work. It's their culture.
Lieutenant Colonel Lee Gutierrez was an advisor for Kurdish troops in Iraq, very friendly to the U.S., but hardly ever on time for a mission.
Then you'd start to explain to them, but you want helicopter coverage, you want artillery coverage. In order to have that for the mission, if you were 2 hours late, we have lost a window.
The helicopter was there 2 hours ago.
You don't have it now. So were we ever on time? No, but it got better.
This is hardly the first time Americans have tried to improve Iraqi forces. Many past efforts didn't work. Now the Army wants to learn from the experience of veterans like Major Sean McWilliams.
I didn't know sometimes who to trust, and you have to learn how to be a people, read people.
McWilliams remembers a time early in the U.S. occupation. His unit tried to distribute free propane in Baghdad, only to find the Iraqis in charge were selling it.
I chose the wrong guy to start that out. That was a tough lesson for me.
You found out that he was stealing, basically.
He was stealing and he was profiting off of that.
The general who oversees training at Fort Riley is Carter Ham, who learned similar lessons during his own time in Iraq.
There are things that occur in Iraq and Afghanistan with their security forces that are intolerable, would be intolerable in the American Army. If a new transition team leader goes in and makes corruption subject number one, then he's going to have a very, very difficult time getting to the desired end state of being an effective advisor.
General Ham says it's more realistic to build personal relationships with Iraqis and encourage them to change later. An instructor here says U.S. soldiers can face even tougher choices. Lieutenant Colonel John Nagel wrote a book about fighting insurgents. He remembers working closely with an Iraqi police chief who provided valuable intelligence. And then,
I received multiple credible reports that Brigadier Ismail was supporting the insurgents in Fallujah, that he was providing weapons, ammunition, body armor to the insurgents in Fallujah who were then fighting against the Marines and against some of my soldiers. And I was at that point faced with a horrible dilemma. What do I do to this police chief who has clearly risked his life to help us? Every time I think about it, I wonder if I did the right thing. But ultimately, what I decided to do was nothing. My assessment was that for Ismail to stay alive, this is the minimum he had to do. This is the minimum tax he had to pay to the insurgents. And therefore, I decided to let that happen, and I never confronted him about it. And it is something I would love to talk to him about today, although sadly, I understand that he's no longer with us.
Americans who once had a mission to completely transform Iraq now pursue the more modest goal of taking any support they can get. At Fort Riley, Kansas, each new batch of U.S. Army advisors has about 2 months of training and talking and thinking.
That's all the major observations we got. Any questions, comments for the good?
One comment for the good is everybody stayed calm when we got here.
Then they're sent off to experience the real thing.
And Steve, that story we just heard from Lieutenant Colonel Noggle, talk to us a little bit more about that. Some people might wonder why he stuck with this guy who clearly was helping the enemy. I mean, he gives an explanation there, but is there more to it?
We had a long talk about that, and Noggle said that one principle of counterinsurgency, which military officers are trying to follow now, is sometimes in an impossible situation you do nothing because any effort to improve the situation could actually make it worse. And he said this kind of dilemma shows what kind of war it is. And let's listen to a little bit more of what he had to say.
There are no good guys and there are no bad guys. Everybody is gray, and you have to look for the people who are more on your side than not and encourage them over time to become more and more and more on your side. But the pressures these people live under are extraordinary. They cooperate with us during the day, and that means that they're visited at night by very, very bad men who are willing to do anything to them in front of their families, or worse, are willing to do very, very bad things to their families in front of them. And that's a pressure that they live under as they're making their ethical trade-offs each and every day, and it's something we have to be conscious of as we expect them to make decisions that are in favor of a free and democratic and just Iraq. And I still struggle with the decisions I made.
Did you continue working with him in the same way, the police chief?
I continued working with him not exactly in the same way. I think that overall he was 70% on our side. But when Fallujah happened, I think the pressures on him increased so much that during Fallujah 1, during April 2004, he was probably only about 45% on our side. And there was nobody to replace him with. But we then started to rebuild bridges. And by the end of my time with him in September 2004, we were back on about the same ground we'd been on in March 2004.
What are the implications of that story for students going through this training right now who will be spending time with Iraqi units?
The students we're teaching, the advisors, trainers, mentors of Iraqi and Afghan security forces, have to understand how extraordinarily complex their role is. Were I to put someone in a scenario where I tell them there's a police chief you're working with and you get credible information from multiple sources that he is in fact aiding the insurgents, instantly all of them would say the same thing I would say if someone put me in that training scenario. I would say, get rid of the guy. Firing the police chief is obviously the right answer. It's obviously the best decision, except all of the other decisions are even worse.
Lieutenant Colonel John Noggle is an Iraq war veteran and author of a book called Learning to Eat Soup with a Knife. He's training American advisors as they prepare for service in Iraq and Afghanistan. Tomorrow, we will hear what happened when one advisor's unit appeared to turn against him.
And you can hear the first of our Fort Riley reports at NPR.org.